Now, I know that I don't need to give this speech to 99% of you. But there's probably about a half a percent of you that have had thoughts of harming yourself. And there's probably another half a percent of you that know soldiers who have thought that. But it doesn't matter, because we're all one team. And we're all in this together. So I'm going to give you the bottom line up front. If you don't remember anything else I say in the next 5 or 10 minutes, remember this. Suicidal behavior in the 101st and on Fort Campbell is bad. It's bad for soldiers. It's bad for families. Bad for your units. Bad for this division and our Army and our country, and it's got to stop now. Suicides on Fort Campbell have to stop now. This is not the reputation of the legendary Screaming Eagles of the 101st Airborne Division. Who?
That's the commanding officer of Fort Campbell, home of the Army's 101st Airborne Division. In May of 2009, the base did an extraordinary thing. It shut down for 3 days following a rash of 11 suicides. And it's not just Fort Campbell. Suicide in the military has skyrocketed since the war in Iraq started. So have divorce rates, triple the national average. Alcoholism for Marines and soldiers, 4 times the national rate. And according to a recent Rand Corporation study, 1 in 5 service members, at least 300,000 people, suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. Brigadier General Lori Sutton knows these numbers all too well. She's the military's top-ranking psychiatrist and the director of the Pentagon's Centers for Excellence for Psychological Health and Traumatic Brain Injury. Steve Paulson asked General Sutton about the surprising decision to close the Army base at Fort Campbell.
It's not at all unusual when there is an extreme incident or event or concern, whether it be an accident, for a commander to call for a safety stand down, or in this case, with the concern of suicide. So you're right. It was certainly a very strong action that spoke loudly about the commander at Fort Campbell's absolute concern with understanding this issue, getting the message out to his troops and their family members that they are not alone, that getting help is an act of courage and strength, and they will become stronger as a result to take that step.
Now, obviously, these issues are not just for those at Fort Campbell. Reentry has proven difficult for many returning troops. Suicide in the military has skyrocketed since the war in Iraq. So have divorce rates. I think the rates are something like triple the national average for people in the military. Alcoholism for Marines and soldiers is 4 times the national rate, according to some studies I've seen. What do you do with these kinds of problems? How do you get help?
Well, that's exactly why we are partnering, you know, with my organization, the Defense Centers of Excellence, which was established about, almost 2 years ago now. We were established as a result of the concerted attention following the Walter Reed tragedy. You know, there were a number of national task forces, commissions, great Americans who stood up to help the Department of Defense identify what needs to be done to improve things. And so one of the common recommendations was, DOD, what you need to do is establish a central open front door, if you will, which would be an integrative place to identify best practices, to validate evidence-based care, and to be able to reach across the continuum of resilience, recovery, and reintegration for our troops. So that's what my team has been dedicated to doing in partnership with the VA, as well as the rest of government, as well as communities around the country and throughout the world.
So you're saying that people high up in the military recognized that something was not working, that these returning troops, many of them, were not really being cared for. Something had to change to help them.
Yes. Think of it like this. You know, the early phases of this conflict, we had really devoted just enormous time and energy and attention to saving the lives of troops on the battlefield. And nothing's short of revolutionary in terms of the trauma care, which, you know, saves the life of a young troop at the point of injury with those great medics and corpsmen who have the life-saving training and resuscitation techniques, the ability to stop the hemorrhage, as well as to be able to transport them very rapidly to the combat support hospital. And this has resulted in the lowest died of injury, died of wounds rate in the history of recorded warfare. Now, what we also learned and what was certainly demonstrated with the Walter Reed tragedy is that there was an enormous rehabilitation component to the care of these complex injuries, and we had not organized to provide that kind of rehabilitation. And so Walter Reed really became a blessing in disguise. I mean, we would have done anything certainly to prevent, would have wanted to do anything to prevent that level of tragedy. But what it did was it exposed the fact that as a department working with the Veterans Administration, we needed to retool our resources. We needed to revamp our disability evaluation system, which had not been updated since, I think, World War II. And we needed to work closely with families, with treatment programs around the country, and with leading scientists so that we could really provide the best clinical and rehabilitation care for our troops, as well as we could identify the knowledge gaps and invest in the science to answer those gaps.
Yeah. Well, let me take an example of, let's say a Marine has just come back home, returning from Iraq, and feels he or she might be suffering from post-traumatic stress. How does this person find help?
Great question. First of all, we have embedded mental health deployers who go out with the units, so that would be the first stop, is to check in with unit resources. And of course, the first level unit resource is going to be that young Marine sergeant. We also have chaplains who are available. We also have a screening program, which has developed considerably over the last couple of years of this conflict, so that Marines, as well as soldiers, sailors, and airmen, they're screened to check in with them before they deploy. Then while they are deployed, there's support available in theater. When they come back from deployment, they're screened again. Now, of course, we know that many of our troops will tell you if all that stands between them and their 30 days of leave with their family, you know, they're not going to say anything that would risk keeping them back. And so we know it's important to not only check in immediately after deployment and to provide that support then, and we do have a number of folks who do come forward at that point for both physical as well as psychological and spiritual injuries, but then we also have a post-redeployment assessment between the 3 and 6 month mark following redeployment.
There's also a huge stigma in the military about admitting that you have post-traumatic stress. The various studies have shown that there are far fewer people who acknowledge this or who get treated than actually have it. And it would seem like there's a serious disconnect there.
Well, and this is exactly one of our concerns, because we know that we will continue to improve our ability to build resilience, to maximize recovery, to promote reintegration. But if along the way we fail to support our senior leaders in transforming the culture to one which recognizes that it's no more important to get help for a physical injury than it is for a psychological or a spiritual injury. This is our biggest challenge right now, and it's one of the reasons why we have recently introduced the Real Warriors campaign. In May of this year, we launched what will be a 3 to 5 year effort. This is a national public health education campaign that is designed to eliminate stigma. How will it do that? Well, by harnessing the power of real warriors telling their stories. I would invite you to take a look and check out Sergeant Josh Hopper, a young Marine sergeant who got help for PTSD following his second deployment, and he's now with special operations, and as his commander said, he's a stronger and more trusted agent now than he was even before his difficulties.
I'm Sergeant Josh Hopper, United States Marine Corps.
He did 2 tours in Iraq, fired thousands of rounds, saw lots of casualties, IEDs. The person he was before those deployments and when he came back, he was a different man.
He was really distant. Mood swings was a big thing. Drinking a lot. We fought constantly.
I couldn't sleep. All I think about is these negative thoughts. I just walked up to my CO saying, "Sir, I've had all I can take. I need some help."
The CO actually personally picked up the phone and lined up inpatient treatment.
seemed like from that day on, when I would go to get treatment, you know, go to my classes, things like that, things started getting better.
Returning to full health and clearances and everything else, I actually respect him and trust him more now because of the fact that he had a problem, he had an issue, he brought it to me. Together we figured it out, we fixed it, and he's as good or better Marine now and in the future.
It takes real strength to swallow your pride and to say, I need help, and to go actually get the help.
When you look back at the history of our country, there is no previous generation from whom we have asked so much, placed so much on their shoulders on behalf of so many for so long. And so to understand that no matter what we do in positions like mine and leadership around the military, the government, and at all levels of our communities across the nation, there's nothing we can do that's going to ever fully match the depth and level of their sacrifice. But everything we do has to count. We cannot be patient. We must give our best every day and not be satisfied the next day with yesterday's best. It's got to keep getting better and better and better to measure up.
Yeah.
You know, it's really such an honor and privilege to be able to talk with individuals like you and to be able to reach your listening audience, because this is so much bigger than the military. It takes a nation to embrace and heal its warriors and bring them all the way home.
Brigadier General Laurie Sutton is the military's top-ranking psychiatrist and the director of the Pentagon Centers of Excellence for Psychological Health and Traumatic Brain Injury. Steve Paulson spoke with her.